is to the rabbit. The idea of this is to sort of make sure you're listening all the way through. Throughout my PowerPoint slides, this rabbit, though he's quite a lot smaller, is hidden. And the challenge is to see if you can count how many times he appears. And we'll see at the end whether anyone manages that. So, the first thing I thought about when I was writing this talk is that actually, chapter 4 is the best talk to do, because I can spend my whole time telling you what happened in the last three chapters, and I don't have to think as many clever things of my own to say. So I'm going to start with the summary of the last three chapters. Found in Bethlehem, Naomi goes to Moab, sons get married, sons and husbands die, Ruth the daughter-in-law goes back with her, gleans in the field, marries Boaz, becomes King David's great-grandmother, the end. But, you know, it's still only 5 to 7, so perhaps we'll go for a more detailed summary. So the book of Ruth is set during the rule of Judges, when Israel was in turmoil. The first chapter begins with a man called Elimelech and his wife Naomi, who decide to move to Moab with their two sons because there's a famine in Bethlehem. The two sons marry Moabite women called Ruth and Orpah, and then promptly die along with Elimelech. Hearing that the famine in Bethlehem has ended, Naomi decides to return to Bethlehem, but she encourages Ruth and Orpah to stay in Moab and find new husbands. However, Ruth is determined to stick with Naomi, and she makes the famous speech in verse 16. "Don't beg me to leave you or stop following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you live, I will live. Your people will be my people and your God, my God." We'll come back to this speech later, but the upshot is that Naomi and Ruth end up back in Bethlehem together. Now in chapter 2, Ruth goes out to glean in the fields, and that's to pick up the grain left or dropped by the workers harvesting. Now, we know that this would have been hard work, and not without risk for Ruth as an unaccompanied woman. But by chance, or was it, she ends up in the field of a kind gentleman named Boaz, who by coincidence, or was it, is a relative of Naomi's. Now in Israel at the time, life was hard for a widow because she had no man to support and protect her, particularly if she had no sons or sons-in-law, as was the case with Naomi and Ruth. Because of this, there were certain customs in place to protect her and to protect the family name. And this involved the practice of a kinsman redeemer. And what this was a close relative of the deceased husband would offer to marry the widow. So because of this, Naomi advised Ruth to ask Boaz to marry her. But Boaz turns around and says, "Actually, I'm not your closest relative, and there's someone whose right it is to marry you before mine, so I'll go and talk to him for you." And that leads us in neatly into the beginning of chapter 4, which Sally's going to come and read for us now.
I warn you, it's a long one. So are you ready? I'm going to read it actually from the Bible that we use in the youth group, which is the Contemporary English Version. So if you're reading it from the Seat Bibles, it'll be slightly different. Well, very different. But it's Ruth chapter 4. "Meanwhile, Boaz had gone to the meeting place at the town gate and was sitting there when the other close relative came by. So Boaz invited him to come over and sit down, and he did. Then Boaz got 10 of the town leaders and also asked them to sit down. After they'd sat down, he said to the man, 'Naomi has come back from Moab and is selling the land that belonged to her husband, Elimelech. I'm telling you about this since you're his closest relative and have the right to buy the property. If you want it, you can buy it now. These 10 men and the others standing here can be witnesses. But if you don't want the property, let me know, because I'm the next in line.' The man replied, 'I will buy it.' 'If you do buy it from Naomi,' Boaz told him, 'you've got to marry Ruth. Then, if you have a son by her, the property will stay in the family of Ruth's first husband.' The man answered, 'If that's the case, I don't want to buy it. That would make problems with the property I already own. You may buy it yourself, because I can't.' To make a sale legal in those days, one person would take off a sandal and give it to the other. So after the man had agreed to let Boaz buy the property, he took off one of his sandals and handed it to Boaz. Boaz told the town leaders and everyone else, 'All of you are witnesses that today I have bought from Naomi the property that belonged to Elimelech and his two sons, Chilion and Mahlon. You're also witnesses that I have agreed to marry Marlon's widow, Ruth, the Moabite woman. This will keep the property in his family's name, and he will be remembered in this town. The town leaders and the others standing there said, "We are witnesses to this, and we pray that the Lord will give your wife many children, just as he did Leah and Rachel, the wives of Jacob. May you be a rich man in the tribe of Ephrath and an important man in Bethlehem. May the children you have by this young woman make your family as famous as the family of Perez, the son of Tamar and Judah." Boaz married Ruth, and the Lord blessed her with a son. After his birth, the women said to Naomi, "Praise the Lord. Today he has given you a grandson to take care of you. We pray that the boy will grow up to be famous everywhere in Israel. He will make you happy and take care of you in your old age, because he is the son of your daughter-in-law. And she loves you more than seven sons of your own would love you." Naomi loved the boy and took good care of him. The neighborhood women named him Obed, but they called him Naomi's boy. When Obed grew up, he had a son named Jesse, who later became the father of King David. Here is a list of the ancestors of David: Jesse, Obed, Boaz, Salmon, Nashon, Aminadab, Ram, Hezron, and Perez.
Okay, thank you, Sally. So chapter 4 is where it all comes together. God's big plan all clicks into place. And right at the end, we understand what he's been doing all along. It's all about David's line. And of course, David was an ancestor of Jesus. So ultimately, it's all about Jesus. So although this is the end of Ruth's story, it's also the beginning of Jesus' story. In fact, the name Ruth is within the first 100 words of the New Testament, as she's listed in Jesus' genealogy in Matthew chapter 1. Because of this, the final part of this series on Ruth has been cleverly given the title An End and a Beginning. But I don't think it's that simple. I think there are many possible endings within this story. And tonight I want to ask, what if? Now, the first point at which it all could have gone drastically different is when Ruth decides to go to Bethlehem with Naomi. Now, I've enlisted some helpers, and for this I'll need Naomi, Ruth, and Orpah to have a look at what happened and what could have happened. So, Naomi, Ruth, and Orpah were on their way out of Moab when...
"Both of you should go back to your mother's house. May the Lord show you the kindness that you have shown my family by giving you each a new husband and a happy home."
"No, we want to go with you to help your people."
"But why do you want to go with me? I'm too old to remarry and to have more sons for you to marry. And even if I did kid myself that it might happen, why should you wait for years alone until they're old enough to marry you? Don't do that. You don't want to share my life. It is too sad because the Lord has been against me." "Your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her own gods. Go with her."
"Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me."
And off they go. So Ruth goes with Naomi. But what if we rewind this, perhaps turn on the microphone, I think.
Hello?
Okay, there we go.
"Both of you should go back to your mother's house. May the Lord show you the kindness you have shown my family by giving you each a new husband and a happy home."
"No, we want to go with you, to your people."
"Why do you want to go with me? I'm too old to remarry and have more sons for you to marry. Even if I did kid myself that it might happen, why should you wait for years alone until they are old enough to marry you? Don't do that. You don't want to share my life. It is too sad because the Lord has been against me."
"You're right. I think we would be better to stay here, Ruth. What sort of life will we lead as widows in a foreign country? We wouldn't even be any old foreigners. We'd be Moabites in Bethlehem. It's really not a good idea. And if she reckons her gods against her, he's hardly going to help us. We'd much better off staying here with our people and our gods and finding new husbands for both of us."
Yeah, you're right. That'd be easier and safer for us to stay here.
Going to Bethlehem would have been a very difficult path for Ruth to choose. She was a widow, and as Naomi says here, there's no chance of her marrying another son of Naomi's. So she was alone, except perhaps for her own family, though they're not really mentioned. And if she goes to Bethlehem, a country which is completely foreign to her, she'll be absolutely alone and alienated. Her only friend will be Naomi, who's just another widow. And the chances of finding a second husband will be much slimmer in Bethlehem, where she's not known, than they will be in Moab. So then, on top of all that, Orpah decides to stay. And although it's not actually mentioned in the Bible, it is quite likely, as we saw there, that Orpah would have been pressurising Ruth into staying. So to stay would have been Ruth's following the crowd option, her easy way out. Yet her love for Naomi and her love for God was such that she didn't choose that easy option for herself. She chose to support Naomi and follow God, even though this made her future hugely uncertain. She accepted God and followed him, and because of this, God welcomed her. Even though, as a Moabitess, she was regarded as a sinner, the Israelites had a bit of an encounter with the Moabites on their way out of the desert, which involved the king of Moab trying to curse them and several wayward relationships between Israelites and the Moabitesses. So she was not exactly regarded as a good person. But even though she was not one of God's original chosen people, she chose God and God chose her in return. And of course, had Ruth stayed in Moab, she would have never met Boaz and the whole line of David would have happened very differently. So what can we take from this? Firstly, that God welcomes everybody. Even though Ruth was a Gentile, she accepted God, and so he was able to use her. So ultimately, Jesus' great, 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 something like that, grandmother, was a Gentile. And this paves the way for the idea that the good news is for everybody, whatever their past situations may be. Also, this passage reinforces the idea that God doesn't always want us to take the easy option. Sometimes God's work seems like the hardest thing to do. It seems like the path on the right. But despite this, we know in our hearts what is right, and we know that we have to persevere with it. Now, I found this personally at the beginning of this school year. I went round all the tutor groups in our school to publicise the Christian Union, which I'm involved in leading. And when we arrived at the first classroom, I knocked on the door and I pushed it open slightly. And as I opened it, I said, "Are you busy?" Or at which point the teacher in the classroom replied, "Yes," and pushed the door shut in my face. The second class we went to listened to us politely. But in the third class, several girls laughed openly at us. And naturally, this left us all very disheartened. Going round the individual classes was not the easy thing to do. The easy thing to do would have been to put a poster up and wait and see if anyone came to us. But this wouldn't have been the most effective method to share Christian Union with everybody. In order to make sure that everybody knew about us, we had to go round individually, however hard that option felt. So we need to remember that God has his plans and we are instruments to carry out these plans. We need to listen to him and trust his support. However hard a decision seems, he knows it's hard for us and he will support us to carry out his will. We have to choose the right path, whether or not it's the easiest path. So this brings us on to the second alternative ending. Even once Ruth has got to Bethlehem, there's still potential for it all to go horribly wrong. So we're going to have a look at what could have happened and then what actually happened. And this is Ruth, Naomi, the mob, and Boaz and his worker. Okay, so Ruth with Naomi.
"I'm going to glean in the fields. Maybe someone will be kind enough to let me gather the grain he leaves behind."
"Go, my daughter."
Luckily for Ruth, that's not what actually happened. So if we rewind it and Ruth gets back over there nice and quickly, we'll have a look at what actually happened.
"Oh, I'm going to glean in the fields. Maybe someone will be kind enough to let me gather the grain he leaves behind.
Go, my daughter.
Yeah, work it. Who's that?
That's Ruth. She's the Moabite woman who came back with Naomi. She arrived this morning and asked if she could pick the grain the workers leave behind, and since that, she has only stopped for a moment's rest behind the shelter.
Ruth, listen. Don't go anywhere else, but stay in my fields. I've warned the young men not to bother you. Feel free to drink the water from my jugs they have brought and share in our lunch.
Thank you, but I'm a foreigner. Why would you help me?
I've heard about how kind you have been to Naomi, leaving your own family to come here, where you know nobody with her. May the Lord reward you for all you have done.
So, Ruth goes home with a bumper load of grain for herself and Naomi. But as we saw, if Ruth had gleaned in any other field, things could have been rather different for her. Gleaning was the practice of gathering grain. It was a way of providing, God's law providing for the poor people. So what would happen is that it was commanded that the grain in the corners of the field or the grain that was dropped would have to be left for the poor people to collect. And it was obviously, it was a physically draining way of earning your food. It was very inefficient as well, but it was Ruth's only option. And it was even worse than usual for her. As a Moabite, she would have suffered much abuse. And on top of this, she was a single woman alone in a field with men, which have left her very vulnerable. But, and the Bible says, it just so happened that she ended up in the field of Boaz, a good man and a relative of Naomi's. Neat coincidence, eh? Now, I was discussing this with a friend last week, and she said to me, there's no such thing as coincidence, only God incidents. And this leads us to the conclusion that Ruth didn't end up in Boaz's field by chance. She was there because God planned for her to be there. It was all part of his big idea. Ruth didn't know that she would be safe when she went out, but she trusted God, and he didn't let her down. He provided. And even though she wasn't aware of the big plan, Ruth was aware that God had provided for her short term. So we can take away the idea of God as a provider. Even if we don't know that it's all going to be okay, we can trust that God will get us through it. We just have to put our trust in him and trust that he knows the bigger picture. Now, I found the following poem, which I think nicely reminds us of this. It goes, "Trust him when dark doubts assail thee. Trust him when thy strength is small. Trust him when simply to trust him seems the hardest thing of all. Trust him, he is ever faithful. Trust him, for his will is best. Trust him, for the heart of Jesus is the only place of rest." I think this really sums it up. It's God who gives us our true salvation, and he is all-knowing and all-powerful. He knows it'll be all right in the end, and he can support us in the meantime. Even if we can't see where we're headed, if we can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, God can see it. God knows it's there, and we can trust him that it's there, and he will provide. So finally, we arrive at chapter 4. And so far, Ruth's accepted God and trusted him, and everything's turned out fine. Then she hits a problem beyond her personal control. Having struck upon the plan of marrying Boaz, Boaz has announced that there's another closer relative, the true kinsman redeemer, who has the first right to take Ruth as his wife, even though she's in love with Boaz. So Ruth and Naomi, as women, have to trust Boaz to sort it all out. And off goes Boaz to the city gate to meet the kinsman redeemer. Interestingly, the kinsman redeemer is never named. In the Pew Bibles, he's referred to as friend, but the original translation of the Hebrew calls him so-and-so. So that's what we're going to call him. So I need Boaz, Mr. So-and-so, and some elders, please. The mob have transformed into elders by this point. And off they go to the city gate.
So-and-so, come here. Sit down, sit down. Oh, yeah, okay. Right. It is you in there, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, I want to talk to you. Elders as well?
Oh, yeah.
Now, Naomi wants to sell the land that belonged to Elimelech. And as you are the closest relative, it is yours to buy if you want it. But let me know if you're not interested, because I'm the next in line to buy it, so...
Of course I'll buy it.
Hang on. There, see? You're forgetting something. If you buy the land, you'll have to marry Ruth. So the land stays in Elimelech's family name.
Oh, I can't do that. I might harm my own son's inheritance. You may have her on the land.
And he takes his sandal off to seal the deal, but gorillas don't wear shoes. So that's all good and well, but what if it hadn't worked out like that? So we're going to rewind it again. We won't make the elders move because it's a bit hard for them. And let's see what could have happened.
Why are you so-and-so? Yeah, come here again. Right. Naomi wants to sell the land that belongs to Elimelech, and as you are the closest relatives, it's yours to buy should you want it. But if you're not interested, but let me know if you're not interested. I'm the next in line to buy it.
Of course I'll buy it.
Hang on, you're forgetting something. If you buy the land, you'll have to marry Ruth. I wouldn't marry Ruth personally, but you can if you want.
A load of land and a beautiful new wife as well. Of course I'll do it.
Okay, thank you. That's the last of their action you'll have to suffer. Of course, this ending wouldn't necessarily have ended in misery for Ruth and Naomi. I'm sure Mr. So-and-so would have looked after them and they'd have lived comfortably. But Ruth wouldn't have been with Boaz, whom she respected and came to love. Whatever else this story may teach us, it is, at heart, a love story. And God recognises that in his... in this particular God incidence of the kinsman redeemer. And of course, had Ruth not married Boaz, the story wouldn't have ended up with her being the great-grandmother of King David either. But God being God, his plans work as he intended them, packed full of God incidences. Ruth didn't know what God's master plan was. She didn't live long enough to see her great-grandson become an amazing ruler, and she certainly couldn't have predicted it happening. In a similar way, we cannot know what God plans for us. We just have to trust that he is faithful and that he will provide. And even when we go through hardship, as Ruth and Naomi did, we mustn't give up on him. We must follow him and stick with it. Ruth lived a completely ordinary life. She was normal and boring, just as we may see ourselves. But she did an extraordinary thing. Against all the odds, in the face of adversity, she chose God. She trusted him and she followed his will. And in return, God used her for a purpose greater than she could ever imagine. This normal woman was, many generations later, part of his plan for the salvation of all mankind. And this is true for us also. However ordinary we may feel, God orders circumstances for ordinary people. He has a master plan for each of our lives, and it's our job to listen to him and trust him so that we can do his will. After all, who knows? Maybe his plans for us are as great as his plans for Ruth. Only time will tell. Oh, missed out the best pictures. You might want to have a look at that picture quickly. That was the love story picture. And this is a trusting picture, because you can't see that they're there, but they are. And did anyone count how many bunnies there were in total? Does anyone think they know Millie? 17. I think I made it.
16.
Oh, I got 18 when I counted. So you've missed one out somewhere. Some of them were a bit trickier than others. But well done for listening.